We are live. Monday morning, it's the 29th of July, and Leanne is here, Leanne Moll. She's sitting there with her phone. She's busy furiously finding us all kinds of news stories and things.
Forgot where I was for a moment. Videos.
Yeah, you also forgot where you were this morning when you were meant to wake up and come and do the show, because you walked in here at like 10 past 6.
Yeah. But
hi, everybody.
I needed some grace because I have a...
She thinks she's the Dalai Lama. She expects a big grand welcome.
No, I certainly did not.
You did?
No.
You walked in, you looked at all of us like, what are you all doing here?
Rubbish. Rubbish.
All right. So, we have quite a lot to talk about this morning.
What do you want to talk about?
Well, I thought maybe we would start with something that you wanted to talk
yes.
about, because I'm that kind.
That's what I was hinting at.
Right. Okay, exactly. So, let's talk about Annelien Kriel. Do you remember her?
Oh, yes.
Annelien Kriel was Miss South Africa. She was also Miss World, wasn't she?
That's right.
Yeah. She was like the most beautiful woman in South Africa. I remember I was like a little kid and people used to talk about her like she was a goddess.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, there's no doubt that she was pretty. And she's just turned 69 years old. She married Sol Kersner as well.
Yes, she did.
Who was the CEO of Sun International. He was the guy who built the palace and Sun City and all kinds of other cool stuff. A real business maven. And he fell head over heels for Annelien Kriel and married her.
That was in 1980. They divorced in 1985.
Wow.
And then she married Peter Bacon, in between Philip Tucker, but then Peter Bacon, who's the CEO of Sun International and the former protege of Kersner.
Well, was a long time after Kersner, but isn't anymore. Not for a long time.
And they chose Mauritius as their new home. I don't know if they still live there now. But she's quite big on social media. She is? Yeah.
I don't follow her. Maybe I should.
She doesn't take herself very seriously, which is nice. And she's just kind of gracefully slotted into her age. She looks amazing at 69.
Is that her birthday cake?
Yeah, it is. Looks very underwhelming, doesn't it?
No, I think it's cool.
Okay.
What, you judge people by their cake, Leanne? What kind of a monster are you?
I mean, it could have had another tier, surely.
Oh, please.
After 69 years.
You just said she doesn't take herself seriously. Plus, 69 is not a big number.
No, this is true.
It is in sex, but not in age.
So why is this significant then? Why am I bringing it up?
Tell me why you've brought up Annelien Kriel and had to show off her cake that you've been rude about.
So there's another picture there, James, and someone sent this to me yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Saying that they had inserted me into the middle.
It does look a bit like you in the 40s one.
How strange. And it's not. This is that's
her.
Actually her. And then it reminded me, and I mean, there's nothing worse than a woman saying, you know, don't I look like a beauty queen. I certainly don't mean that, but there's something in the facial structure, which is kind of there. It reminded me that my uncle from a very young age, when I was, I don't know, about 10, said she looks like Annelien Kriel.
Really?
Yeah, so weird.
Okay,
I mean, there's Claire Johnston as well.
So you just brought her up so that you could get some compliments today.
No, it's just funny how there are doppelgangers out there.
Look, yeah, there we go.
Yeah,
It's just exactly the same person.
So I'm not saying. Then there's Claire Johnston as well, who we know.
Mango Groove. You do look like her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just quite strange how these people walking around.
Okay, so next Monday.
Yes.
Why don't you tart up for the show?
Okay.
Okay, tart up and look like that middle picture, because I know you can do it, not with these horn-rimmed glasses.
Well, I'd have to.
Yeah,
I'd
do
have
the
to
hair.
Get my hair
and, yeah, come on.
Colored and all sorts of
come
things.
Come on.
Okay, maybe not next week because I'm dealing with a lot, but
oh,
I will.
Okay. All right. When is it a good time to look good, Leanne?
Well, it's not always a priority.
Come on. Tart up for us. I think you want to. I think she wants to tart up. Ooh, so hot, Leanne, says Tubble.
Oh, wow.
Come on.
Wow.
Do it. It'll make you feel better. It'll make us feel better. It'll be a fun thing.
Okay. And you? When are you going to tart up?
Please. I don't get better. This is as good as it gets. What are you talking about?
Well, that's how I feel.
Nonsense. I made a poem. Annelien Kriel got bored and found a new peel. Now she's settled with a business maven in a tax haven. That's a lovely... What a lovely poem, Carl. Is that for her birthday?
Cuff.
Are you going to send that to her for her birthday, Carl?
krill and pill. That's the first thing that came to his mind. And then he built something around it.
Hugh Direction, another lovely name, says, proof that beauty's like rich men. If you're struggling to find a hot wife, up your game and earn more money. Absolutely. Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's amazing that that's a priority for men. It really is. I'm not...
You know, I what I liked about that range of pictures that you put up is that her in her 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And, you know, I hate to sound like the bird song, turn, 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 but like there is a season for everything, right?
Mm.
You're not going to look like a, you know, hot 20-something piece of ass in your 60s. If you do, it's going to look weird.
Mm.
Like I know someone who... She's trying to be, it's like this girl I know's mom, okay? She's trying to be like mutton dressed as lamb.
Mm.
And it's just, it's a little bit awkward because she's like, hi, everybody. Are we ready to party? And you're like, No, yeah. You don't need to be doing that.
You know, there's like a blindness that happens.
Listen, maybe there are 20-year-olds saying that about us, okay? So I get it. Like, it's also, there's a huge amount of hubris and like, I know better than you at every age. You always think you know better. The older ones are too old. The younger ones are too young. You think everyone's stupid except you. I get that. But what I'm talking about there with that range of pictures is like, it's appropriate at every age that she looked the way that she did.
Yeah. Now, some people like, have a blindness with that, right? So that's where you end up with.
That's like this cougar I'm talking about. 70-year-old
women
yeah.
who still have... this pitch black dyed hair
and yes.
the nail jewelry. And
right.
it's like they're blind to what's actually suited to them.
And now
and because, how they could look better.
And because the times have changed so much and people are now I think there's a lot that's going on in society that is making it acceptable for men to also behave like that. You're getting guys, and listen, I don't have a problem with this either. We've talked about it on the show. You're getting guys who are going to Turkey for hair transplants.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting guys who wear makeup. You're getting guys who are going to gym in their 70s. Awesome, right? I don't have a problem with any of that stuff. I also don't have a problem with guys who dress younger than maybe they are. But there's something kind of cool about like being a little silver fox, you know?
Mm.
Like there's something nice about a guy who's got the laugh lines. Something nice about a woman who's, you can tell from looking into her eyes, she's lived.
Mm.
She's got stories to tell. She's not some rag doll, some doll who has to be put in a cabinet at night and kind of frozen to keep her looking as young as possible at all costs because we worship youth. And I don't think it's necessary. There's something beautiful about someone at every age if they are confident about themselves at that age. Like, I don't think it really matters if you want to put your best foot forward, tart up, like we were saying earlier. Mm. There's nothing wrong with that. And nobody's always going to get it right. Some people are just naturally very lucky. They age gracefully. They seem to have the character that can overcome almost any physical flaw. But I do agree with you. Like, there's some people are blind to the fact that you can't. Like sometimes it's okay to go gray. Sometimes it's okay to like maybe put on a couple of kilos here or there. I'm not saying you should be obese. Sometimes it's okay to let the wrinkles just come.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's not going to, it's not going to make you any worse because you're not in the marketplace of a 20-year-old anymore. You're in the marketplace of a 50-year-old.
Mm.
And that's good.
So
we've all got to get comfortable like Annalyn Creel. That's the lesson in those pictures to me.
Absolutely.
I love it.
For her, you know, especially in the space of beauty that she's grown up in and spent her whole life immersed in.
Yeah.
To accept yourself when you get to a certain age, that in itself is beautiful.
Percy Stachiosa says, Gareth's constantly in tart mode. Thanks.
Gareth, you're all tart.
Yeah, I'm going to keep on trying. I'm in tart mode. Yeah, that's good.
Tart mode on.
Yes. You know, and it does strike me as very modern to think this way. I mean, like, people were old already in their 40s back in the medieval era. You didn't last much past that.
No. And
you were finished.
As recently as our grandparents.
You may as well have been 100.
Yeah. I mean, I remember my gran, when she turned 50, this is what my mom always said. When her mom turned 50, she would wear a floral dress and matching shoes and matching bag.
Yes.
And cut her hair short and curl it. Yes. Like the queen.
There we go. Slippery Pickle says, James, are you guys using a concave lens on Gareth's cam? His eyes are looking a little close to his nose. Get fucked. Okay. I shave my head, says Carl, because I'm bald, but my pubes are gray. Does that count? Carl, no one's looking down there.
No.
No one is interested. I think you mean my wife, Dirk. That was a proper slip there. We won't let her see that. Well, James, can we edit this out in case she watches the podcast? My wife is hotter today at 42 than she was at 26 when we met without surgery. I just pray every day that she doesn't need me.
That's so sweet.
That is, you know what? Even though you called her a wide, that is the kindest thing I've ever heard any guy in our comment section ever say about his wife. So you know what, Dirk, you can stay.
Jeez.
I like the idea that she's hotter to you at 42 than she was at 26.
Mm.
And you know what? There's something about also knowing people. I said to this mate of mine, I made a speech at his birthday dinner, and I said, you never make new old friends, which is a line I've used before on the show. But it's so true. The more memories you have together, the more lovely that person is. And I said I took this long drive on my own from PE to Plett and then back on the Sunday. And it gives you a chance to think about all the things that you're really grateful for and that make you happy. Mm. And I'm not one of those people who sits and does a gratitude journal or any of that shit. But when I'm in the car on my own, I think about those things because it makes me happy. And if you're not going to put, you know, gratitude back into the world, you're just not going to get any more things. So I think about all the people I have in my life and how much I love them and how many great memories I've got. There's a lot of nostalgia and excitement. There's a bit of sadness because you're like, we can never have all of that again. Because you always think, like, oh, we could always do that again. I could always get together with those people again. But chances are you won't.
Mm.
So it's a memory. And therefore, that can bring a little bit of sadness. But mostly, it's like pure happiness and joy because you've had an experience of being around each other at a concert or, you know, someone's birthday or sharing a really funny story on holiday or whatever it might be. And the fact that you've been through that with somebody, and in Dirk's case with his wife, and you've been doing lots of cool things over the years with them, means that that relationship is so much more valuable than like what you look like.
No, it's like what Dr. Hanan often says, it's the value that counts the most.
Yeah.
What it's worth and what it would be to lose it.
Do you like having that mic right up your nostrils there, is it?
I do. It's very comforting.
Because I just noticed now it's like blocking three quarters of your face. You can pull it down a little bit. Look at Leanne hiding behind a microphone. Pull it down a little
bit.
Is
that better?
Oh, there we go. It's a bit better. Yeah. Percy says, row, row, row your boat. Life is but a dream. It's very poetic this morning. But Marco says, very well said, Gareth. I think he agrees with me. The looks, and I, you know how superficial I am, Leanne. I mean, the looks are, it's great in the beginning, but the looks aren't going to keep you there.
Mm-mm.
So there's got to be more to it than that.
It doesn't mean you have to go out with an ugly person.
Oh, hell no. Don't be revolting.
Don't drop your standards too much.
Don't be revolting.
Revolting.
For that. You don't need to lower your standards and go out with someone revolting. Okay, that would be really bad. But but you can get to love someone. Mm. And you probably will love them more the more time you spend with them. Unless, of course, you're that couple from Dr. Hanan earlier.
Yeah.
Like separating.
Like a quarter of the population of the married population are still together. The rest.
Is that it? A quarter, huh?
Mm.
Sure, it's tough out there. Marriage is having a tough time right at the moment. Mm. Okay. I would like to know a little bit more about something else that you brought in for this morning in your show and tell book.
Oh, yes.
No. What she said is, she said, what 2-week itinerary would you recommend to someone visiting South Africa for the first time. We've touched on this once or twice before. Like, if they come to Joburg, what would you do with someone who's been to Cape Town but never been to Joburg? What if they've only been to Cape Town and Joburg, but they've never been to like the Drakensberg, mm-hmm. the Kruger National Park? Those are the obvious ones, but yep. there are lots of not so obvious ones, right?
No, absolutely.
Why do you ask? Have you found the ultimate list for us?
Well, this is meant to be the most practical and the best way of seeing most of South Africa in 2 weeks. And I wanted to know what people think about this.
Okay.
A lot of them are pretty obvious. So this is the 2 week South African itinerary that would take you on an unforgettable journey through the best of South Africa. You would start in Johannesburg for 1 to 3 days.
Okay.
Feels a little long for me. I don't know if it's because I'm from Johannesburg.
You've always been so anti-Joburg. I mean,
but I mean, I don't know what I would show the person. So that's what caught my attention on this itinerary first. So for 1 to 3 days, you would visit the Apartheid Museum.
Mm-hmm.
So very touristy. You would visit neighborhoods like Maboneng and Newtown.
Yes.
You would visit the top of Africa. Did you know that that was the name of the top of the Carlton?
Not the Carlton. Who would want to go there? You go to the Leonardo. I was there the other day. That's much higher and much better. And much not in the center of town.
So the tallest building in Africa, according to this, is yes. the top of Africa.
No, man. There's a bar at the top of the Leonardo. You can go and see like the whole of Joburg from. Waste and your time. The Carlton.
So, and I
you can't
also,
even get up those stairs probably. Maybe the lifts don't even work.
I looked it up and it said temporarily closed.
Yeah, man, cuck, that whole building's closed.
I was so confused. So you wouldn't send someone into the middle of town because I wouldn't.
Hell no.
Then.
Aren't we meant to be looking after tourists or we try to piss them off?
Then, listen to this. They give you 3 options of accommodation for each.
All right.
Budget, mid-range, and luxury.
Okay.
Well, while you're in Joburg, then why don't you stay in this hostel located in the high energy central neighborhood of Braamfontein?
Are you insane? Do you want these people to sue South Africa for the rest of their lives?
It offers dormitory and private rooms at affordable prices.
Uh-uh.
It has free parking and airport transfers.
Sure, free parking. You know why? Because they take your car.
And is close to a lot of great restaurants and attractions.
Cuck.
This is where it's really piquing my interest.
Who wrote this? Satan?
This is on an international website.
Well, they should shut it down. What's the high range?
I'll give you the mid range quickly. Is Voco Johannesburg Rosebank? I'm not sure. I haven't seen that before.
Okay.
It's a hotel.
We don't even know Joburg clearly.
This is where I started doubting myself. And luxury, the Saxon Hotel, Villas and Spa. This we know.
I mean, that's free. It's expensive as hell.
Expensive as hell. So. I firstly think 1 to 3 days was
too much
overkill, right?
And you know what? Frankly, you need to see like Maboneng. I mean, really, a meal and get the fuck out. I mean, there's no need for you to hang around there.
Yeah.
I'm a JOMO, joy of missing out person. So I would have less on that itinerary completely. But okay, let's move on from Joburg.
Okay, now we're off to the Kruger Park. Days 4 to 5.
Right.
So you'd spend 3 days in Joburg and only 2 days in the Kruger Park.
Right.
All right. So you would take a drive or flight to the Kruger National Park. You'd see the Big Five if you're lucky. You'd spend 2 days exploring the park on game drives or guided walks. So also you could take a self-ride safari. I don't know if I would put tourists on a self-ride.
No, tourists are stupid. They'll get out. And they'll want to feed the lions or no.
They won't get out of the way of the elephant.
If they can afford it and you've got friends that you actually like and they come to South Africa and really money's not an object, there are a million amazing places to send them to. It's if they're cheap or you don't like them.
Then you send them to that hostel in Braamfontein.
Then you send them to the hostel in Braamfontein followed by a self safari where you're allowed to get out and pet the lions. All right.
Oh, gosh. All right. So we're in the Kruger Park now. And mm-hmm. If you decide to drive, you'd be traveling through the panoramic route. So you'd see Blyde River Canyon, etc.
Unless you go on that road that takes you past Bushbuck Ridge.
Yes.
In which case the scenery's fucking awful, but okay.
So where to stay? Again, we've got our budget.
Bushbuck Ridge.
There's Skookooza Rest Camp. So that's not bad. So many options. There's chalets and cottages and safari tents. And
nothing wrong with the Kruger Park, yeah.
The Sitara Rest Camp and the Lower Sabi Rest Camp. And then it's saying within, private game lodges, there are several of those. You'd have your luxury experience.
You get the ones where you got your little private plunge pools that's kept at 28 degrees, no matter what time of the year it is. There's a little dish with every kind of biltong that you could ever think of.
Yeah.
There's the game drive at whatever time you want to go.
The bath overlooking the savannah.
Everything. And they literally will bring you, say you want, you want to see 10 leopards? We've made it. We can make that happen. The leopards are
Timothy.
Like, coming. Okay. Yeah, you get those.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're off to Durban.
Oh, do we have to?
Do you see?
Yeah, I think this is a bit of a bullshit thing, but okay, let's go. Let's just, we're you know what? In for a penny, in for a pound. Yeah. Let's go.
Days Durban. 6 and 7 in Durban.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
So from the airport in Kruger, you would fly to Durban.
To King Shaka Airport, right?
Correct. Uh-huh. And now you're looking for your beaches, your delicious Indian food and reliably warm weather. A great place to start here is Minitown.
Oh, it's gone. It's gone. It doesn't exist anymore.
You see?
It's been wiped away. Someone has bulldozed it. I'm pretty sure it's not there anymore. Minitown.
So that's where it's...
Minitown was fun and looked... I think it had its last paint job when I was 5.
Yes.
It's over, guys. There's got to be more in Durban than Minitown. Oh, wait, there isn't. No, okay, we can do the Indian food.
Yes.
But you'd have to actually find an Indian family that would cook for you.
That's the thing for me. It's about the personal experience. Yeah. You're sending people to restaurants.
Yeah.
That's not for me.
No.
You know, I've said it before. Once in the Seychelles, we found a local fisherman.
Was this travel list set up by like a Nigerian prince? Hamin says, it's a scam, right? So they give details that you can book with them and then they steal all your money. Is that what this is?
Could be.
No, if you forced me to spend a night in Durban, because I wouldn't want to go there right now. I know there are lots of people who are happy there. Guys, place is just disastrous, right? So if you had to spend a night there, maybe the God, it's really difficult, hey?
Well, I've got your budget mid-range and luxuries.
Go on.
So let's see. Excuse me. Your budget would be the Bel Air Suites Hotel on the Golden Mile.
Whoa.
Yeah. Mid-range, also near Golden Mile, is the Travel Inn in Durban.
Oh, my God. That's mid-range in Durban, you must know. Look at Leanne. She's coughing in horror.
Sorry.
It's so revolting. Okay, and the upper end?
Oyster Box.
Okay, now, yeah. Okay, look, Oyster Box, yeah, cool. All right, that's probably the only reason to go to Durban. Right, let's get the fuck out of there.
Let's get out of there. We're going to Drakensberg, which you recommended.
Yeah.
And I think that would be lovely.
Mm-hmm.
So you would drive from Durban into the Drakensberg, beautiful drive once you start nearing there.
If you know where you're going and you have GPS.
Yes, you must have GPS.
If you're some foreign tourist, I heard a story over the weekend about this couple that we meant to take a 3-hour drive. It ended up being like 10. And then everything was everyone else's fault, but they didn't know how to operate their GPS. Don't be an idiot.
Don't be an idiot.
Or get someone to drive you if you don't know.
Yes.
We have huge unemployment in this country. It's bound to be someone who can drive you there.
Yes. You hire the car and let them drive it.
Yeah.
So obviously you've got fantastic hikes. You've got beautiful Cathedral Peak, Giant's Castle, the amphitheater. Yeah,
cut to the chase. What's the budget accommodation in the Drakensberg?
All right.
A hut.
Where to stay? Budget is Ledger's Retreat near the Royal Natal National Park.
Okay.
Gorgeous setting.
I don't know it, but right.
Everything included. Mid-range is the Montusi Mountain Lodge.
I've been there. It's magic.
Really?
I've never
heard of it.
So nice. Like really nice fireplaces in every room.
Okay, so they say for luxury also Montusi Mountain Lodge because you've got so many variables again.
Right.
And different.
I mean, beautiful, and you're right in the amphitheater there.
Mm.
Lovely. Okay, good.
Ooh, it makes you want to go there.
So far. Yeah, especially in winter. Oof,
nice. Yeah. Okay. And we end off in Cape Town, days 10 to 12. I definitely would have shaved a day off of Joburg and added it to Cape Town.
Right.
Because you're not talking about just Cape Town itself. You're talking about the winelands as well. Obviously, you would fly there. And then they recommend the double-decker hop-on, hop-off.
Well, people like that because it gives you your bearings.
You can also just get off when you want to.
Yeah, and people do that in all these other big European and North American cities.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
It's acceptable when you're on a short trip.
Sure.
And then they say maybe Clifton Beach, Kirstenbosch Botanical Gardens.
Yeah.
Table Mountain, of course, taking the cable car up for different hikes.
Got to do that.
Boulders Beach, Simonstown.
It's going to be a wine farm.
Right. Then we head to the winelands. They're saying do a driving tour of the Cape Town winelands. That means somebody's not going to be able to drink. So take a tour.
Azalea says there in the comments, put that up again, guys, because this may be something we should do. We should take the team on this trip and do the show from these places to give us a proper review. I'll do the upper end ones. James can do the budget ones.
Oh, is that how you're going to split
it
up?
And you can do the medium ones. How about that? All right. Are you in, James?
I would do it for the medium ones.
You're going to stay at that backpackers in Bromfontein?
Brummies.
No, that day I'm busy. Oh, so he's busy that day.
No, I think it's important to go and test these places out.
Matthew says, what, Cape Flats not on the list?
Yeah, you see, that wasn't in there. So that wraps it up, guys. I mean,
yes, it's Leanne. I'm glad you're not my tour guide. Hey, if you came at me with that list, I'd really think that you needed your head read. And you say this is a reputable travel website that people trust. No wonder tourism's in the toilet. Who's our Minister of Tourism now? We've got a new one.
Oh, gosh. Who is it again?
Still Pat DeLille? It's still Patricia DeLille. Listen, Patricia, you had those posters that said, vote for Auntie Pat. So Auntie Pat, look at this list and fix it. There's a lot of cuck on there. We need to find more reasons for people to come here. Honestly. Oh, okay. Alan Knott Craig's online. Well, let's get him. We waste his time like
I really was looking forward James to Craig, but anyway. Get what you get.
All right, Leanne, enough of that stupid old joke. He's heard it a million times. Alan Knott Craig is the entrepreneur, author, founder of FiberTime TM, aiming to eradicate the digital divide through innovative pay-as-you-go fiber internet solutions for townships. His smash bestseller, Don't Panic, I think that was the last time I spoke to you, Alan, was based on an email to employees. It was published back in 2008. He lives in Stellenbosch, and he's written a new book called Life Lessons, How to Fail and Win. So nice to see you again. How are you?
Great. Thanks, guys. Nice to see you again as well.
Yeah. Sorry about Leanne's cuck joke. She really doesn't have a lot of scope.
It's not the best time I've heard that.
Yeah, exactly. He's heard this when he was at school, Leanne.
I know. And also his father, senior.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, your dad had to go through all those jokes long before you. In fact, your dad probably said to you, like, "Now listen, son, this is going to happen at some point. Just be ready." And you were
I wish nobody gave me any warning. Yeah. If you're not Craig, who are you?
All right, so tell us about the new book, because this sounds interesting. I hear lots of people saying, you know, fail forward, fail fast, and admit your mistakes and learn from them and move on. But I'm sure that those three sentences are not enough to make a book. So what kinds of things have you stumbled upon here that made you sit there and go, hang on, this is actually, there's quite a lot here. I think we need to put a book together.
Yeah, look, my whole life I've been taking notes about all the mistakes I made and all the things I remembered. And I mean, just to be clear, it's not a book about hardship. It's not about overcoming hardship or struggle or anything like that. I've come from a pretty privileged background. But there's still a lot of lessons that I learned that I wish I'd known when I was 25. Things like, you know, marry the right person. And if you, I mean, luckily I married the right person, but if you marry the wrong person, get divorced quickly and marry another right person. You know, don't give up when you make a bad decision, rip off the band-aid, move on. I learned a lot of lessons about partners, you know, how to find the right partner, how to find the wrong partner, how to get out of bed with the wrong partner. You know, 100 little things like that. And I kind of evolved from an entrepreneurial story into like a life story, you know?
Well, I mean, let's start with that, because I think there's so many people, including you know, we had an email earlier that we read to Dr. Hanan, who's our psychologist on the show. Yes, we do need one, by the way. And that was about someone who has been married for 25 years, but it's just not working anymore. Now, in business, it's very hard to find that right partner. And when you do, you kind of have to, you have to know what the ground rules are. That's what he said. And even if things go wrong, you need to know what the ground rules are so that everybody can move forward with consistency, right? So if you were to choose a new business partner now, Alan, with all your experience, and by the way, I mean, you've started Cellfind, iBurst, you were involved with Mixit, Herotel, the 21 companies that you founded or run. So you've had lots of partners along the way. What makes for a really good business partner?
You have to, well, just my opinion. Mm. It's a lot like what you're looking for in a wife or a husband. You know, you're trying to find somebody who laughs at your jokes. If you don't share the same sense of humor, you've got a problem. And this is about, you know, values. So, you know, it helps if you kind of come from the same kind of upbringing, you know, the 10 commandments or whatever your things are.
Yeah.
And I think, there's like some obvious giveaways when you find the wrong partner. And like greed, for instance, you know, you kind of know that this person doesn't look at the world the way you look at the world, but you're so desperate that you're willing to turn a blind eye to things like that. So, I mean, honestly, I don't think there's a secret formula that you can write down a little list and you can go through that list. I think you kind of, you go with whoever's in front of you. And if you've made a mistake, you quickly move on. You know, you don't just stick it out for 20 years just because you've made a decision. You kind of move quickly. And you try to turn up the temperature as quickly as you can in the relationship so that you find out quickly who you're in bed with. And if you've made a mistake, you move on. You know, that's kind of that's the important thing.
And it can be costly, but money is something that sometimes it's the cheapest thing to lose, because there's your sanity on the line. There's your family, your relationships, the fact that you could start again. And sometimes money is actually the best way out of some of these things too. I mean, I know somebody who said, actually, when you're getting divorced, the best thing to do is to get rid of that person at all costs, even if it does cost everything.
Yeah, I look, it's not fun losing money, and I don't want to underestimate how that stuff's not fun. And I have lost money that way. And I actually did, when one of my partnerships didn't go so well, I did actually give away a lot, and it just whatever it cost was good for me. Because I actually think, you know, it doesn't really matter what you're doing with your life. If you're not enjoying who you're doing your life with or doing your business with, you're not going to be happy. So, but yeah, I mean, look, I think it's more emotional stuff, to be honest. The stuff that really kind of, you know, I thought was more painful than the money was the kind of emotional investment you make in people and then disappointing yourself and others. So, you know, live and learn.
So we live in South Africa, and South Africans, a lot of us in South Africa, we don't have the view of failure that the guys in Silicon Valley have, or even in parts of the world like China and India, where there are so many people and there's so many things going on that your chances of continuing to succeed or even making it are getting less and less if you don't move quickly.
Highly competitive.
Yeah, and we attach like such shame to failure in South Africa. I think it's fair to say that, don't you?
Yeah, I think we are a little bit Calvinistic around here. But, you know, I don't think it's such a bad thing to, you know, look down upon failure. It's not something to really celebrate, to be honest. But, you know, if you're out there and the more the risks you're taking, you must have done this 100 times. You must have made mistakes on air, etc. And you look back and you cringe and you think
all the time,
you shouldn't have done that. But you become immune to it. It's almost like having a vaccination. You know, you become immune to this kind of fear of failure. It's more the fear of failure that's the problem than what people think. And once you've kind of gone through a couple of those little stumbles and come out the other side. And in my own career, I mean, I've made 100 mistakes and maybe 2 or 3 good decisions. And just a couple of good decisions or, you know, kind of lucky breaks got me ahead of the game. So, you know, failing hundreds of times, that's probably a big lesson I learned. You know, you don't really have to worry so much if you make lots of little mistakes. As long as you get a couple of big ones right, you're going to be okay down the road.
That's such a valuable point. And also, other people aren't really looking at your life through a magnifying glass. You think they are. You think they're all looking at you with your last failure, for example, and they're going, oh, that guy's such a failure. But probably they're not even thinking about you, right?
Yeah, as one of my friends once told me, that the people when there's bad press about you, the people who matter don't care, people who care don't matter. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of carried a lot through all of us. But, you know, the one thing that I think I was told this when I was young, but I didn't fully appreciate it, is that, you know, business is rough and tumble, and you've mm-hmm. got to harden that. You know? I mean, you can't be in this game and think to yourself, it's all going to be kid gloves, et cetera. And, you know, once you've kind of got your head around the fact that it's not always going to be fair and it's not always going to be fun stuff, then, you know, when you hit those little bumps on the road, you're not thinking, oh, woe is me, I'm the only one out there. If you're not willing to have a little bit of a street fight, you shouldn't get on top of you.
And do you attach a huge amount of value to patience, having been in business a while? You said, you know, it's a couple of lucky breaks, three or four things. You said two or three, but I don't believe it. You've been successful in more than two or three. A couple of lucky breaks, but some hard work that's gone on behind the scenes. When those good things happen, rare as they are, they can sometimes spur on incredible success. But patience is valuable, right? You have to sometimes wait a lot longer than you thought for things to come to fruition.
Look, I hate patience. The concept of patience, not what I like. Very impatient person. And I don't think it's a good thing to encourage too many people to be patient, because that's kind of the people that said Rome wasn't built in a day. You know, they weren't in Rome, so they wouldn't know. But that said, I think that what I've realized is what I respect about you, Gareth, is you're still going. You know, I respect people that don't give up. You know, it's like right. This. And the longer people are around still chasing, the more respect they get. So you're not going to get a lot of respect in any industry if you're not, you know, around for a long time. And my own experience of little businesses was it took about 2.5 years before I knew, you know, we were on a good track or not. And, you know, if we were on a wrong track, I would stop and start another business. I'd still chase the same purpose. I'd still be trying to make a profit. I'd still be trying to get people on the internet. I would just try it in a different way. So there's like a little subtlety to that whole thing. You don't want to get stuck going down a dead end for 20 years, but you don't want to change your mission every 2.5 years either. I mean, and patience is part of it, you know? So, you know, I mean, I don't think I'm a patient person, but I'm so fixated on my purpose and I'm so fixated on trying to make a living that I am kind of in the game and I'm not giving up, you know?
Well, I appreciate the honesty, because most people would go, oh, no, patience is very important. And, you know, I've learned.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it, though, especially with our era. You were seen as a more valued person if you were stable in your job and you'd worked somewhere for 20 years.
Stuck it out.
You worked hard, you know, and you went through the good and the bad.
And you got to watch it like 60 years old from the company.
And then we were followed by a generation of, geez, if this thing isn't working after 3 months, I'm out of here.
Dump it.
Yeah, so it's about finding that balance, I think. Knowing when to leave.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, a lot of people ask me when to start a business. I mean, my old man never told me to start a business. He told me to go get a job and work for a company. Every time I tried to start a business, he'd kind of try to discourage me. I remember the last time, in fact, the Heritage did quite well. He told me I'm making a massive mistake. I shouldn't do it.
Really?
I'm not sure we should listen to our parents. I think your parents until you're about 25, because they know more than you do. But over the age of 25, you've got to make your own decisions. And most of your parents, if they love you, don't want you to get hurt. So they're not going to suggest you go down the path of risk. They're going to suggest you go down the safe path.
That's quite a big thing that you just said now, is that sometimes, because most people, you know, you should trust your parents, certainly if they love you and they do want the best for you. But business and doing the cool and interesting and exciting stuff carries a huge amount of risk with it. And obviously anyone who loves you is going to say, rather go the safe path. They're not trying to make you less successful. They just want you to be comfortable, happy, secure, with a minimum amount of risk, because they love you, they care about you. But sometimes that doesn't go with actually making things happen.
100%. And you know, the guys, the girls and guys that are really talented are the ones in the most difficult position. I mean, nobody ever offered me a job. You know, I didn't come top of my class in anything. I was never the fastest in anything. I was just such a B player. And so, you know, the world is not like offering me opportunities. Whereas, you know, if you are that kind of A player, duck scholar, et cetera, you know, the corporate world is sucking you into that world. And there's a lot of low risk, relatively high reward stuff. And getting out of that game to be an entrepreneur is very, very difficult. So, if, you know, for those people, good luck. My own path to be an entrepreneur is I couldn't get a job.
Yeah. And some of us are just unemployable, right? Are you one of those people who believes that business is really ruthless and that it's mean? Or is there a way for business to be fun and exciting without having to be cutthroat?
No, I definitely the latter. I mean, I think my 99% of my experience in business has been, it's been a lot of fun. It's been very honorable. It hasn't been cutthroat. It's been a, it's a wonderful part of the sector. You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. But there are some businessmen who are total dicks.
Yeah.
And there are some businessmen that use litigation as a tool. And there's some people that screw people. And I've encountered those people. I've had partners like that, and it hasn't been fun.
Right.
And like I said, businesses crumble. You've got to kind of deal with them every now and again. But it's not a, it's not part of the daily grind. You know, it's very seldom. And the vast majority of people I deal with are just great people. You know, everyone's just trying to make a buck and get ahead.
So when we talk about how the world has changed, and this is very much in your wheelhouse, the internet, the ability for people to access information like never before, the ability for people to set up networks, to meet the people that they want to meet, to get the businesses that they've got on their mind off the ground, it's probably never been a better time than right now. I think that that's, that sounds like something nobody wants to hear if they're nervous to make the move. But it really is like all the stars are aligned for anyone who has a great idea and a good work ethic and is prepared to put themselves out there and take the risk. Do you think that that's true, or do you think that it was easier to start a business in the pre-internet age?
No, it's definitely easier now. I mean, the internet's obviously leveled the playing field for a lot of people. But I think more than that, I think you've, the first thing you've got to realize is you shouldn't be picking a business that's highly, an industry that's highly competitive. You know, that's the problem with the kids that did really well at school. They go to 100 meter dash and they're taught to compete and they win when they compete. And they do maths and they compete and they win when they compete. Guys like me who wanted to win but couldn't actually win on in any competition, we'd find a game that nobody else was playing and we'd win because nobody else was playing. Now, that's a good lesson because, you know, as an entrepreneur, you want to go find gaps. You don't want to go find something that everybody else is doing and do it better than them or do it. I think more for me, my own personal journey, I mean, I got extremely lucky in my career. And one of the things I got very lucky on was my first business, we started in 2003. And it was the beginning of a big economic boom. You know, the global kind of, it ended in the global financial crisis, but we sold that business in 2007. And, you know, that 4 or 5 years was the whole economy was pumping, interest rates were low, everything was going up. So, and if you catch, you've got a boat on a rising tide, everyone makes money. Yeah. And it feels to me like the second context right now is kind of close to that. We've had high interest rates for a while. We had COVID. It's been a hectic couple of years. Economy's been struggling, companies, individuals. But as the US interest rates start coming down, inflation comes down, South Africa's interest rates will come down. You combine that with the miraculous election outcome and the kind of sentiment that we've got in South Africa right now. It could be a 5, 6, 7 year little rising tide. And then anybody's got a boat and that tide's going to make money. So, well, it's got a better chance of making that money than when the tide's going out.
Alan, how do you know, I don't know if you address this in the book or not, but how do you know when you've actually made it? Because there are probably really successful people that we all know that have done so well. They've shot the lights out. They've absolutely revolutionized some particular industry. They've made tons and tons of money, but deep down inside, they don't think they've made it. How do you know? How do you know that you've been one of those people who can say, yeah, I've achieved what I wanted to achieve there?
Well, I mean, and again, I'm only speaking from experience and I reserve the right to change my mind. But I mean, I do think that reading all these books, your health is the most important thing. If you lost your health, it doesn't matter how much money and how much family you've got. The second thing is your wife. You know, if your relationship's weak, that's not going to be a, it doesn't matter how good everything else is. And the person you're going to spend the most time with you in your whole life is your spouse, obviously your kids. So health and family. And then as a pure entrepreneur, it's about money. You know, there's a lot of purpose. You know, I personally have a great purpose. I think I'm connecting people to the internet. I'm thinking I'm making the world a better place and giving people a shot. But the truth is the measuring stick is money.
Yeah.
And as an entrepreneur, you want to try get to a number that you don't feel, that you don't have to think about money anymore, that you're just working because you want to work, not because you need to make money. And I actually had I was very lucky. I was once invited to a dinner with Bill Gates about 10 years ago. I asked him, I said, Mr. Gates, what's the magic number? You know, where do you stop needing to worry about money? And he said, it's $10 million. He just said it's straight. I mean, so I think if you $10 million, then you don't think about money anymore. And a lot of entrepreneurs, that's kind of what you get in your head. And quite funnily, it's a lot of people think it's a lot more than that. So you don't have to get a lot more than that. You just got to get to that number, and then you don't think about it anymore. And from then on, you move on. So, and then for the rest, I think, you know, I like Phil Knight from Shoe Dog. I like Anton Rupert from Rembrandt. I like some of these entrepreneurs that built these kind of global businesses. So, you know, saying that you left something behind that wasn't just in South Africa, that'd be quite cool.
Melissa asks in the comments, she says, how do you maintain a healthy work-life balance? And what advice would you give to others struggling in this area? I'm sure you know countless stories of these unbelievable business mavericks who've done such incredible things, but their family hate them because they've never really spent any time with them. That balance is hard to achieve, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And look, I've had my speed wobbles. I'm not perfect. But, you know, about 15 years ago, I Googled, how do I wake up early in the morning? Because I used to be a late sleeper. Mm-hmm. And some guy said on the internet that he used to be a late sleeper, and then he just figured out how to wake up early in the morning. And since then, I've been waking up at, you know, 4:30 every morning. And it's just amazing what you can get done if you cram in those early hours, whether it's exercise or reading or meditation or, you know, just or work. You can do everything that you would be doing in the evening. And then what I personally make sure is I just absolutely fanatically make sure from 6 o'clock onwards, I don't look at my phone and I'm with my wife and my kids. That's my work-life balance then. And around exercise, I try to integrate exercise into my day. So I go for walking meetings. I try to go to gym, but I try to do walking meetings, et cetera. So, yeah, and I'm very lucky. I married a great lady. She looks after me. I'm so grateful. She makes sure I eat well, et cetera. You know, if you've got that life partner, it's going to make a big difference. You know?
So Kanisa Sineke in the comments says, hi, Gareth, please ask your guest, when is fiber time coming to Makanda in Grahamstown? So it seems that people in Grahamstown are clamoring for your product.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Tell her we're coming as quickly as we can. We're actually in PE at the moment, in Cape Town and PE. We're coming to Joburg soon.
Cool.
So Makanya's on the list. Yeah.
And I mean, this is another thing that Don Kitty says in the comments. I'd say starting a business isn't for everyone. I mean, entrepreneurship is having its moment in history. I think entrepreneurs are looked at as rock stars these days. You know, we used to envy celebrities. I think now the world's most famous people are probably really great tech entrepreneurs.
Especially in the world of VR and AR and AI.
Yeah, I think that's true. Mm. But entrepreneurship isn't for everybody, Alan. It's a really tough thing. Everybody goes, oh, that's so nice. You can take a holiday whenever you want, or you can pay yourself whenever you want. But that's not how it works at all. You and your needs come at the end of a very long list of things that need to be accomplished every single month. And while most people who have a job are happy on the 25th of the month, this is their best week right now. This is an entrepreneur's worst week right now, right?
Nah, 100%. You know, and you'll only know it when you tried it. I mean, in the old days, they used to say every family had a black sheep and they swapped it with an entrepreneur. You know, like you kind of have to have an entrepreneur in your family. Everyone had a curse. And I think most entrepreneurs are struggling. You know, I don't think the vast majority of entrepreneurs are doing really well. So it's not the easiest grind you'll ever do. But, you know, a lot of people knew what they wanted to do with life. I don't know what I wanted to do with my life. I became an entrepreneur because I couldn't get a job. But if you know what you're going to do with your life, and that happens to be an actuary or an auditor or a marketing manager, well, that's great. I think this kind of journey is really just for those people who got a little itch they want to scratch. And and the only way to figure out whether that itch is for you is scratch it and try it out. And to do that, you need to have a safety net. You need to have kind of some fallback position because it's so financially risky. It helps having a wife. It's making a bit of money. It helps to have a bit of savings. It helps to have not a lot of debt. It helps having a simple lifestyle. And then you give it a go. And after a couple of years, if it isn't working, you go back into corporate and you don't look back over your shoulder thinking, what if?
Yeah, South Africa is a good place for this. You know, you mentioned how we're going into a kind of new era now. I certainly feel that way. But I think that this place has always been a good place to try things out because I think the cost of failure isn't as unbelievably high. And I also think that we've got so many problems that are ready to be solved that if you're brave enough to try and solve one of those problems, you may. It's not guaranteed. Nothing's guaranteed. But you may end up making quite a lot of money.
I think that point is actually the most important point. You know, South Africa is one of these unique countries that has first world type of infrastructure, banking systems, company registrars, technology, human resources, all of that. And it's got these third world problems. You know, so we've got towns. Most countries with slums don't have enough first world infrastructure to tackle the problems in the slums. We yeah. have the combination of both. So if you can figure out a way to tackle problems in slums and townships, you're going to make a lot of money. And because there's not a lot of competition there, and there's an enormous market over there. So I think that's a big thing. And that's one of the reasons I'll never live overseas, is because firstly, it's too competitive. You're tackling problems that everyone's trying to tackle. And secondly, yeah. what are you doing? Just trying to help rich people have a better life. You know, that's okay. Nothing wrong with that. It's just once you've lived in a country like South Africa, where perfect everywhere, and you look around and you can see so many people are less fortunate than you, and you can help them, then everything else feels a bit meaningless. So
absolutely. That's
South Africa for me.
Yeah. The book is called How to Fail and Win: Life Lessons, from Alan, not Craig. How much time do you actually get to write things like this? Or are you using AI? Because I think a lot of people are using AI to do things now, and we're not even sure whether we'll need human authors at some point in the future. You know, you ask the right questions, you'll get brilliant answers from AI.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a view on this whole AI thing. But I wake up
early. You don't have any view on it? You're neither a friend nor a foe of it?
No, I honestly don't care. It's just noise. It's like the elections, you know. It's entertaining, but it's just noise. I just keep my head down. My mission, I want to get people on the internet. That's it, you know.
All right. I love that. I mean, I think a lot of people are unhealthily obsessed with it, but I think that it's probably going to be an important component of our future. But you're saying I'll cross that bridge when I get to it, right?
If there's a bridge.
maybe it's not in your future. I love it. Okay, Alan, it's very good to see you. It's nice to spend some time with you, as always. Good luck with the book. I'm sure it's going to be a real winner. Life Lessons, How to Fail and Win, with Alan, not Craig, this morning. And I wish you well. It's always nice to catch up with you.
Thanks, guys. Nice to see you. Cheers.
Thanks. Great to see you too. Sure. Lots to think about this morning.
But that's so true. What Alan was saying about South Africa, it is really the land of opportunity if you are an entrepreneur or a businessman.
You just
There's
have
so
to,
much to fix.
You have to remember to keep people like Leanne far away from you, at least one chair away, so that, yeah, if she coughs on you, you don't get sick.
Yes. Well, we hope that this is short-lived.
And she's going to tart up for us. Maybe not next week, but soon.
I'll surprise you one day.
That'll be fantastic. I'll be so excited. But just make sure that you warn me a little bit so that I don't end up looking like a homeless person on the day that you tart up, all right? That'll be very nice.
There's only so much tarting up you can do.
Nonsense. I've seen you when you really need to, you pull out all the whistles and bells and all those kinds of things. All right, everybody. It is almost time for us to wrap things up. Have an awesome day. And we will see you on Wednesday morning, 6 o'clock, bright and early, right here. We've actually got a cool couple of things happening this week. Let me give you a little forecast of what else is coming. Warris is joining us on Wednesday. I don't know if you've seen, but he's been so outspoken about, among other things, American politics. So he's going to be popping in. We're going to be talking about that and a whole lot of other stuff. We've got Luis Ogola likely to join us on Friday. So plenty of good stuff this week. Stick around. We'll keep you company. Have an excellent Monday and keep warm.
Back in this time, she wants to be a glamour puss. And voila, here's our glamour puss. She's wearing a black leotard, a little white jacket we found at a thrift shop. And look what we did with her hair. We made cat ears out of her hair. Or you can go all out and do this. Meow. Or you might prefer the